I think it's I've been inspired. I think what I did has been done in different ways and forms. I think, there's been many different projects, applications that have been funded by Bitcoin, and really just, yeah, I'm a wit I'm in the audience. I'm a fan, and I've seen it happen with my own eyes. And I think it birthed a frustration in me, be like, I want to put Tanzania on the map some way, somehow. How can I do it? And I was just very blessed that my network in the Bitcoin community and Nosta community was enough to kind of get enough traction. To kind of I think it was about $600 total for me to climb it. To pay all those fees. And I wasn't asking for 50,000 or anything like that. So it was something I felt was achievable and noticeable, and something I, from what I understood about the community, that they would get behind.
Yeah. My light quakes. My light who? Brunson on the beat. Yo. Nosta, look what you made me do. My light quakes, my light who? Just climbed Kilimanjaro. I just climbed Kilimanjaro. I made it here with Nosta Zaps. Zapathon man got my back. Thank you to BTC Map. Guys are funding my Stemster fam. What's the goal? What's the plan? Tanzania needs Bitcoin, man. So I went up to Uhuru Peak. Now the whole wide world can hear me speak. I'm open source about my dreams. I know any change gotta start with me. A proof of work academy. We DCA to BTC.
Hey everyone, welcome back. This is episode 9 of New Renaissance Capital. Today on the pod, we have Tanzania's Man Like Quecks, who recently summited Mount Kilimanjaro with support and funding from the Bitcoin and Nostr communities. And Man Like Quecks isn't just an outdoorsman with physical prowess, he's also a musician. He wrote and performed that intro music you just heard, and as I learned in the interview, he's also a teacher. Given that I too love the outdoors, make music, and used to teach in a formal setting, Man Like Quecks and I had a lot in common, and I really enjoyed speaking with him. But just a quick note before we get to the interview. As always, I want to say thank you to everyone who's been listening. I very much appreciate it. If you could like, subscribe, rate, review, etc., it triggers the algorithm to help more people find the pod. And with that said, let's dive in. Here's my interview with Man Like Quecks. Okay, I think we're good to go. Hello, everybody. We are back. We are here today with Man Like Quecks, who is coming to us from Tanzania, our first guest from Tanzania, which is awesome. I reached out to him on a whim after seeing him complete his recent climb. He conquered Mount Kilimanjaro, and it was partially or fully funded by Bitcoin donations. So I was like, I got to reach out to this guy and see how this went. So he agreed to do it, and here he is. So I'm going to give a quick introduction, then allow him to introduce himself. As I said, I saw him climbing Kilimanjaro. That sort of piqued my interest as someone who trains as a triathlete, likes to be outdoors. He's into Bitcoin, which is cool. And then also he makes music, which I found out from Lorraine Marcel at Bitcoin Dada. So there was a lot to like here. Yes, please, I'll hand it over to you. Please introduce yourself a bit to the audience and fill in any anything I didn't share there.
No, thank you. Thank you for the intro, and thank you for inviting me, Frank. When I received your message, I was a few days from the summit, which was
Oh,
pretty
okay.
cool. And I think basically what I set out to do had kind of happened by getting some interest from our community, the Bitcoin community, Nostr community, really just trying to gain some awareness about Bitcoin in Africa, Nostr in Africa, and specifically Tanzania. So yeah, I'm based in Tanzania, live here with my wife and my daughter, and yeah, we're
Nice.
just happy to be learning more about Bitcoin, and
Cool.
kind of took on this task and this challenge because a Kilimanjaro is kind of in our backyard. It's kind of here, and I thought it was just a great opportunity to kind of show a proof of work kind of task, and kind of create a case study for what I want to do, which is Bitcoin education, and kind of just break down the barriers of for especially those who are here in Tanzania, just understanding, learning about Bitcoin and the power of it, and then also just celebrate those in the community, the Bitcoin as a community, and how they can support different projects around the world, borderless, peer-to-peer payments. And yeah, I got to thank all the different platforms. I'd love to thank as well. But yeah, just that concept was really intriguing to me. So that's kind of why I took on the challenge.
I love it. And the title of your academy, the Proof of Work Academy, I love that too. I do really love this idea of you are not just sort of saying, I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to climb Kilimanjaro, kind of do something inspiring, but do it in conjunction with raising the funds in Bitcoin. Do you think there's something about Bitcoin that inspires people to do difficult things? That inspires people to do notable things, that creative things, and sort of notable things that get people's attention, and like I said, inspire others. Do you think it's something about the asset that does that?
Yeah, I think it's I've been inspired. I think what I did has been done in different ways and forms. I think, there's been many different projects, applications that have been funded by Bitcoin, and really just, yeah, I'm a wit I'm in the audience. I'm a fan, and I've seen it happen with my own eyes, and I think it birthed a frustration in me, be like, I want to put Tanzania on the map some way somehow. How can I do it? And I was just very blessed that my network in the Bitcoin community and Nostr community was enough to kind of get enough traction. To kind of I think it was about $600 total for me to climb it. To pay all those fees. And I wasn't asking for 50,000 or anything like that. So it was something I felt was achievable and noticeable, and something I, from what I understood about the community, that they would get behind. And yeah, I've seen it before, so I wasn't really reinventing the wheel. Just probably just a new challenge. Yeah.
How does it feel to be one of those figures in the community now? Someone that, everybody had their eyes on, that they were supporting. Is it has it been a, what's the word? Not a triumphant feeling, but like, has it been satisfying to have accomplished what you set out to do?
I think it was out of my comfort zone, because like I said, for instance, if I'm known in the community as someone who makes music and kind of an artist, so there was that. For me, I love doing that, and it comes very naturally to me. So again, I wanted to kind of break a barrier and kind of step into, I'm really looking to educate a community, really looking to kind of increase Bitcoin adoption in Tanzania, and I wanted some sort of credibility in that kind of sphere to kind of fork in a sense. So yeah, I think it just came. It was great that career in the music side will kind of aided this new endeavor. And then yeah, it was really warming. It was really warming to see the same people who supported me through the music were supporting me in this task as well.
Cool. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So when you sort of put an idea out there in the world, say you're going to raise money for it, when you sort of go all in on it, there's some inherent pressure, right? There's some pressure to now get this thing accomplished. What did that feel like? And we talked just for a minute before we started recording. You said, it took a physical effort, an emotional effort, a spiritual effort. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, so it just in the context of family, my wife and I, we just moved to a new location. So we moved to a new city. We're starting a new project, an education project here in Arusha. So Arusha is called the Geneva of Africa, and it's usually, and it's like the safari hub of Tanzania. So if you want to kind of go to
Cool.
pretty much most of the parks, you end up going via via the city of Arusha. So it has a great international community to it, and a great feel to it. So, timing wasn't perfect timing. We just kind of moved,
Yeah.
and we have an 18-month-old, and all the things with that. But again, I felt a calling in the sense of like, I want to hit the ground running on this side. We're committed to our careers in Dar es Salaam, and I want to kind of start afresh here. And I think this will be a good way to do it. I'll be very honest, there was a lot of early days when it kind of went out. I think, like I said, people were not familiar with me doing educational projects. People familiar. If I said I'm going to drop an album, I think people will be more susceptible to that. But because I was saying I'm going to climb Kili to start an education project, and I think fair enough. It was kind of new. It was kind of like a curveball, and it did take a little bit of a while to kind of get that traction going. But I think also the tools that I used, the Geyser Fund page, they've really integrated with Nosta really, really well. So I'm not sure if you've used the page yet, but so basically when you post your page and you connect it with your Nosta, each Geyser page gets you a Lightning address. So mine was poa, PWOA at geyser.fund. And then with Nosta, if you're sort of familiar with Nosta, you can have a Lightning address. So all I did was put that Lightning address on my Nosta profile, and I could be talking about the weather, I could be posting food, I could be whatever. And if you're zapping that, you're indirectly zapping my project, which is very different to the first time I used it before Nosta, where I felt really challenged to kind of. There was a lot of resistance because, for instance, if you were on Twitter, you'd have to leave Twitter to go to the Geyser, and then whatever steps you need to do to zap me, you'd have to do that. So the level of resistance dropped like significantly, and someone would zap me like, and then they had a bot that would kind of come back and say, "Hey, thank you for zapping Man Like Quakes Power Project." Da, 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 da. And then they'll be, "Oh, okay. What just happened here?" Then, more interest would happen, and people might even donate more. So, like, those tools are really, really great. They helped a lot.
Nice.
They really, really helped a lot.
Yeah, that's awesome. I forget now. I'm kind of questioning it, but I do have, I think it's Getalbi. I have that set up for my for, through Noster, and I think I used the same address through Geyser Fund. But I do have to look into that a little bit more. I didn't realize how seamless or how frictionless that it is. That's cool. That's really, really cool to hear. I have a bunch of other questions about both being outdoors, doing that stuff and music, but there's one question that I meant to ask from the beginning is where does the name Man Like Quicks come from? I've been curious since I first heard it. So if you could explain, that would be great.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, no problem. Yeah, it's a question that comes up quite frequently, and it's a story. I have a lot of adopted nephews. So I was a teacher in a school in Dar es Salaam, and there was a group of young men who just, I mentored and we were just close with. And so my last name is Kweka, so Kweka. And then they just shortened it to Quakes, like they shortened it like that. And then one of them was just like, based off the way I do things, I was like, "Oh, that's a Man Like Quakes. Like that's the way he does. That's how he does stuff." So it's kind of like a lifestyle or a way I do things. He just kind of he categorized it. Oh, it's like it's Man Like Quakes. Like,
Nice.
and then if they mimicked it, it was like, okay, that's like Man Like Quakes. So then when I heard it, I was like, oh my goodness, that just phrase sounded so awesome. I was like, that even sounds good for like a rap name. I was like, you know what, I'm gonna just use that in my raps and stuff. And so now it's like a call. It's like Man Like Who, and then Man Like Quakes, and then it just works. So shout out to Mark Heap. That's my nephew who gave me the name. I even spoke to him the other day, and he's like, "Yeah, as my name's worldwide now." He's like, "Yeah, no problem, Uncle Man. You're welcome." So all good. Yeah, so I got that name from them.
I love it. That's actually, I was going to ask you what you also do professionally. So you're a teacher. What grades do you teach and what content or what subject matter do you teach?
Yeah, so I was in sports, so I got a sporting background. So I was a director of sports at an international Christian school in Dar es Salaam, And yeah, coaching, anything sport related was that, physical education, all those things. So yeah, so very, very, very into those things. And yeah, Bitcoin has been kind of, it's kind of come close to that. So I'm probably gonna watch, I'm gonna actually stay up and watch that NFL game later on, the Lions and the Chiefs.
Oh, cool. Nice. Nice. And so, do you still teach full time? You teach, or you just moved, so will you be teaching in a similar sort of setting or
Yeah,
no?
we've moved. So my wife and a partner have set up their a business for like a, called the Learning Orchard. So we're setting up
Okay.
a like a learning center and kind of specifying on kids with we need more learning accommodations. So it's a little bit more niche and a little bit more specific. So we've moved into that. So with that move, that transition, I'm taking a little bit of time out regards to kind of start jumping into something new, but my hope was to kind of establish some sort of Bitcoin education based in Arusha, and that's kind of how POA started as well. So it was
Cool.
like I want I needed a name and a proof of work at academy, and also the word POA is a response in Swahili, is a Swahili word, so it kind of so I don't know if you if in Swahili. A greeting is mambo,
Okay.
and then the response is po. And a response is poa. Like, so mambo
Okay.
is like how are things, and poa
Yep.
means like things are cool. So
Okay.
again, it was it again. It's target. It is targeting the youth and probably that younger generation. But yeah, I just wanted something cool, something fresh, and then linking it with proof of work and calling in an academy. It all just kind of worked. So yeah,
That's
that's how it's
amazing.
all linked together.
Super
Yeah.
creative. I was also a teacher by trade. I just stopped teaching about 2 years ago, so it's a fourth thing that we have in common. There's a lot of overlap here. It's great.
Man.
My Swahili, I used to be a language teacher too, so I have a background in linguistics, so it's good that I'm
Okay.
learning. Dada was my first word in Swahili that I learned, sister obviously from Bitcoin Dada, but I'm learning slowly but surely, which is good.
Your kaka, by the way, that's Kaka is a brother.
Oh, cool,
See,
very cool.
so you can be you
Much.
can be Bitcoin kaka, no problem.
I like it. I'm into it. Very cool. So with your background, so let's quickly just get into the actual journey. How long did it take you to go from the base all the way to the top of Kilimanjaro?
So it was a seven in total 7 days trek, so up and down, so 5 days up, or really 4.5 up and then like 2.5 down.
Okay.
And yeah, I'm not sure if you want to go through all the steps of it, or how you
I
want to
guess what
describe
I'm
it,
curious.
because
Is it like is does there is there like an actual climate change? Is there do you have to do it at a certain rate so that your lungs sort of adjust to the difference in the air quality and stuff like that? Are there physical reasons why you sort of have to take it slow? Okay.
I mean, they're different routes. First and foremost, there's different routes to the summit, and this the route we took is a route called Machame. So that's a village on the slope of Kilimanjaro, and that's where my parents are from. So again, there was a bit of a sentimental value standing from that particular gate, and that gate is about 18,000 meters above sea level originally. So so you go through different zones, so different climate zones. So you have a forest zone to begin with, so you notice like it's super green, trees are like 30 feet tall and whatnot, and you're kind of walking through a forest zone, and then you're slowly going up to a new zone where there's kind of a shrubbery and kind of vegetation zone, and that's kind of the first base camp where you go. So there's Machame camp. And then yeah, so each time you're going higher, probably by, maybe about 800 or 1,000 meters higher each time, or so. So the first camp, I think it was shy of 3,000 meters, and then you acclimatize, so you sleep there, you camp. We had like my group was a group of five, just me and four other people. And then I had three guides, and then the porters as well, and they're just built different. They carry 20 kg, and they move 10. It's like some trips is like 7 to 10 kilometers, on an incline, and yeah, they move, and they're really, really, they're just super fit. And And yeah, so you so basically you're slowly getting used to each zone
Okay.
as you go along, as you go along. So that's why. So you can even do it in 5 days, you can do a shorter one, but 7 days was I was advised. And the good thing about the Machame route is they call it the whiskey route because it has ups and downs. And yeah, so day three, you go from 3.9 to 4.6. Four thousand meters, sorry, 3,900 meters. Appreciate you use different metrics, and then 4,600 meters. It isn't all in one day, and then you go back down to like 3,800 meters.
Okay.
So actually, that day, it threw me off. Actually, that was a day that actually it really messed with me. Like headache and all the altitude sickness kind of hit me pretty hard. So yeah, so I'm so but I did get to acclimatize to it, and then managed to strategize for the rest of the journey.
Okay. Very cool. Was there ever any period where you were like, what am I doing here? Is this going to work out? Is this not going to work out? Or was it just, you just sort of expected it a
Man.
little bit?
A mixture. I'll be very honest, like the
Okay.
summit night, because again, like so when you that after that particular day, you end up trekking up to 4.6 again. So I was a little bit conscious. If obviously you appreciate when you've had that experience, you're like, oh, my day's 4.6 again. So I took some of the altitude sickness pills called Diamox, and it helped me
Oh,
with that.
interesting.
Yeah, so you take Diamox, and then so I took half, like 125 in the morning and 125 in the evening, and then so that helped a lot with that. So with the summit climb is quite difficult. So you start at midnight,
Okay.
and it's freezing cold, and then it's dark, and it's just like people just have headlamps on, and you're just kind of like trekking in a line, and you're like snaking up the thing, and that took. I mean, I didn't get to the first point until like sunrise. So that's like, imagine like 6 7 hours you're just walking at night. And I've got so many layers on. Like I've got like 4 layers on the bottom, I've got 5 layers on the top, got a woolly hat and all sorts. So there was a lot of questions asked. And also you're going from 4,600, breaking 5,000 meters, and then you know it's just a whole new thing. So you're going against the grain, and your body's like, I want to sleep, it's cold, why am I here? What is this for? All these questions, like it's a battle. It's a battle. Yeah.
Yeah. Congratulations for pushing through it. Had you ever done
Thank you.
anything comparable? Was this like a first in terms of, is this the most extreme thing you've ever done physically or?
No. So actually, I did it with the school I was working with previously, about in 2020.
Oh, cool.
So, but with that one, I didn't summit. There are three peaks at Kilimanjaro. There is Gilman's Peak, there is Stella Point, and then there is Uhuru Peak, which is the highest one.
Okay.
So we took a different route called Marangu, and they call it the Coca-Cola route because it's a
Okay.
little bit more just gradual incline. And we was a group of 40 as well. So it was a little bit different, and a different kind of experience. And I was challenged by the summit. That was my first experience doing the summit, actually. So I
Okay.
had a bit more of experience of it, but the terrain is slightly different. It feels more like sand than actually going up on a rock. So
Wow.
I was really challenged on that one, and I wasn't taking the altitude kind of medication either. So I managed to get to Gilman's. I think it's been a revenge mission ever since. So it was like I came back, I was like, I want to find the best route, and I'm gonna make sure I get to the summit as well. So yeah, I put
That's
a lot of
amazing.
pressure on myself as well by kind of posting it online as well. So
Yeah, that was my thought. It was just when you make something public like that, and when you're in the middle of the struggle, you're thinking to yourself like, what did I do here? Couldn't I have just sort of maybe not done this? But no,
Definitely.
I think there's something, it's I spoke with I was speaking with Luthando and Bitcoin Akasi about doing difficult things, the importance of doing difficult things. And he talked about how he learned to surf a little bit later in life. And he talked about how difficult that is. And he talked about how difficult it was when he first tried to wrap his head around what Bitcoin is. And it's important that we do these things. And I think it's important that we're a model for doing these things, especially like you, you're a teacher. It's important that people see this. And you have now literally and metaphorically put yourself on the map. And with that, even now that you're done, it comes with, there's notoriety, but then there's also a certain degree of, there's eyes on you, some responsibility maybe. And it's it has to be, I guess, an exciting feeling. We're at this amazing sort of turning point in human history. You're now sort of, you've put yourself on the map as this sort of representative for this new monetary / information phenomenon that is Bitcoin for a country. Is that exciting to you? Are you proud of it? Or are you excited to have sort of taken on this role for Tanzania?
I think it's a great question, and I think it I've had many years thinking of how can it be a collaborative thing? How can increase adoption of Bitcoin in Tanzania? Like how can it be celebrated? And just a lot of hows.
Yep.
And I'm sure this. I flirted with the idea of climbing Kilimanjaro, but with Noster and Geyser Fund, like it just kind of like a lot of the tools kind of were I can't kind of facilitate at the right time. Yeah. So even also I got a big shout out to BTC Map as well, Nathan Day. Like I pitched him the idea, and similarly, I don't know if you've used the app BTC Map. It's a really cool app it's a really cool app. You can just download it on the App Store, on Google's Play Store, where it encourages merchants to put themselves on the map.
Okay.
So you would just open up your map. It feels like Google Maps. And then you can just find Bitcoin stores, like merchants on there. And you go global, you go worldwide. And the thing is, like for me, like obviously the first place I looked was Tanzania, and it was bare. Like there was nothing there. Mm. There was no merchants. There was no like light bulbs there. There was nothing. Like you go over Europe and you see great things. You go over America, you see all these great stuff. You see all these different little stores, like just so many, like a cluster. And then you look over like Africa, and it's just like, I was looking specifically at Tanzania, and it's just like, there was somewhere in Mwanza, I think I saw, and it was just, that was about it. And I was like, no, it's got to change. So as much as the notoriety came, it was more the sense of like, it was a birth of a frustration of how can I have an opportunity to kind of make a change. Yeah. And it was great in the sense of it bridged the two communities. So I welcomed my Bitcoin community who I've grown with and who I've learned from. And then like I have my TZ community who don't know much about Bitcoin, but they know me, and even my nephews, like my nephews, my mentees who I talk, they're like, oh wow, like how much is 2 million sats? I was like, well, it's almost like $550. He's like, oh for real? Like, you raised that? Like, and it came from worldwide. I was like, yeah, that's how it happened, man. The costs were covered. So it was a real tangible case study. So now, with POA, the project, like that's my case study. When I'm going to go to schools in Arusha, like it's just there. It's the numbers don't lie, like, and the pictures don't lie. That's how I got up the mountain through Zaps, through Bitcoin, through Satoshis, and people from all over the world, contributed to that. So yeah, it's just the beginning. It was just like, it was just something. It was something to kind of a catalyst to kind of help me share what the potential of Bitcoin, basically. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. That's amazing. It's a great story. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't have been happier that I reached out just to hear that part of it. That's amazing. I think it's, because we're going through this really interesting time in human history with Bitcoin becoming more widely adopted, I truly think that people are going to look back at who some of the sort of major teachers were around the world, and you're going to be remembered. That's my opinion. So I think that you're doing something maybe bigger than you even sort of recognize right now. Yeah. And I hope that that's the case. Yeah. At least, speaking of someone who will be remembered, I was speaking with Okin in Namibia, who is quite a character. And I
oh my days.
yeah, he's wild. And we actually, it was weird. I lived in Namibia for a little bit, and I actually was friends with some of his friends, but we never crossed paths, which was super weird. Yeah, super, super weird.
Wow.
But I had one of his friends gave me a record by a group he was in called Black Vulcanite. And there was one track on that record that I absolutely love called I Hope They're Right. And while we were talking, he mentioned to me, oh, I used to be in this, I think it was a trio, this hip hop trio called Black Vulcanite. I'm like, you're in, like, I have that literally on my hard drive. I have those MP3s randomly, super random. What that made me think of is actually what I wanted to ask you next about. There's a lot of creative types in Bitcoin too. So there's people like you, someone like Paco de la India, who's traveling around the world on Bitcoin and documenting that, another sort of big task, a big feat. But then there's this also, there's creative people. There's people like Okin who are, you know, who were creators as well. And he talked about how discovering Bitcoin, he just felt like a kid playing. Like there's all these new apps to learn and all this new, you know, technology to learn. Do you see any sort of parallel to creating music and to getting involved in the Bitcoin world? Do you feel that the Bitcoin world is inherently creative and that there's a lot of creative stuff happening there, much like the music world?
I mean, especially Nosta has really opened the door for me. Like they now, like I'm even wearing purple now, like Nosta and Bitcoin just go together so well. I was almost late for this call because I was on Nosta and something just happened and I was just like, okay, let me just get off this call right now. I see it so much because I mean, it's just so liberating, man. Like as a musician, I don't know how far you went with it, but I mean, I've got songs on Spotify and Tidal and all those things. Like I've had hopes and dreams of having songs kind of played on the radio, which they have had the pleasure of that happening as well. But it's just like, you know, you just felt like a tadpole in an ocean, man. You just like, it was so big and mass and huge, and you know. The platforms that are out there now with the creative ones, like I don't know if you're familiar with Wavelake, with the creation of platforms built on Bitcoin, such as Wavelake. I don't know if you're familiar with Wavelake.
Yeah, of course.
Those guys, what they did and what they've done, and the thing is, you're talking to musicians who have felt that same frustration of. Wait a minute, like I can create, and then also there's a peer-to-peer kind of value system. This value for value system is out there. Like how can you merge those together? And then now on top of that, now on Nosta, there is a thing called Stempsta, which if Okin feels like a kid on there, then like this is where I'm at, because it's literally you have this amazing platform which is built on Nosta where you can literally a producer can just put a beat on there, you can download it and then remix it and put it back up, or they can even put just a loop, and then it's almost like it's just like a collaborative space, and it's just like, you know, you just keep going. So we even started doing it like a cipher, like a weekly cipher on there. Like someone gets nominated, so a producer gets nominated, and then so it's actually going to drop on Friday, so they'll drop the beat tomorrow. And then everybody goes there, gets their pen and, you know, drops like their hot 16 bars and then posts it back. And then someone kind of stitches it all together.
Yeah.
It's just fun, man. It's so fun. So I love how whatever Bitcoin is, I mean, from what I understand, it's birthed out of frustration, birthed out of a financial crisis, birthed out of thing. And, you know, anything that you're frustrated about, like for me, my Bitcoin story is because, you know, I couldn't send money overseas very easily. You know, the borderless payments was a frustration for me, and there was a way to do it, you know, using Bitcoin, even other digital currencies. But that's what intrigued me, and intrigued me more to learn about, you know, Bitcoin. So so use it to this day. So I think any frustration can create a creative solution from there.
Yeah, it's a great way to put it. And I think the way you're describing music and people building on this stuff via Nosta is kind of like, it's like open source development of music. It's not necessarily, you know, like the same way developers work together to develop parts of Bitcoin or implement proposals. It's similar with music, and that's a whole new world, and it's fascinating. I actually come from that world. I was in the music business before I was a teacher, so I started a division of Warner Brothers. I guess at my peak, I worked with Jay-Z for a little bit and some other major names, but I came from the DIY scene, more on like the hardcore and punk community, the DIY music scene. But I also grew up in New York during the mid to late 80s and early 90s golden era of hip hop, where people are handing out flyers. So I saw what a bottom up sort of movement looked like. And when someone described to me what Bitcoin was, I was like, oh, this is DIY music. This is do-it-yourself music and music. This is open source collaboration, people spreading the word via word of mouth, because a lot of what I experienced with music was like nobody was the scene that I was a part of, nobody was sitting around saying, okay, we're going to wait around for like a record label to sign us. They were like, we'll put out our own record. We'll make our own music. We'll put on our own shows. And that to me felt like what Bitcoin was. There was this inherent sort of collaborative, we're going to build this thing together to make it survive. So the night someone told me about it was an instant down the rabbit hole. Instant. And I didn't, at that point, I didn't even look at it through the financial lens. It was just the social lens. I said, like, what happens if people around the world can collaborate, all different cultures? And I also taught, I was a English as a second language teacher and a writing professor. So I had spent time teaching people from 150 countries. So I was constantly getting all this input from people around the world, constantly having my mind sort of develop as I had these conversations. And I'm like, wait, now we all have a protocol to work on together and it's going to revolutionize money. Like, there was nothing about it that seemed small to me. It was just like, this is infinite. And there's so much to. Yeah. And that was immediately when I was, it took me a while to get the courage to start doing this, but my thoughts, I lived in Ghana for a little while, and I lived in Namibia, I lived in Venezuela. I spent time in Southeast Asia, but I was like, I had lived in so many parts of the world that in some ways were sort of cut off from certain traditional systems, but I had met so many people from these parts of the world that were so entrepreneurial, so good with their hands, so good with their business, so smart, that I was like, oh, the human capital implications of this, like what the world is going to experience as more people have a platform and as more people can contribute to the world, whether it's teaching about Bitcoin or even contributing as a developer or doing what you did, climbing Kilimanjaro in the name of bringing more attention to Bitcoin. It's to me, it's just this endless world of human potential. And I think that you're like a case A example of that, which is, why I reached out. But yeah, so for me, the social, of course, but that's really good to know about Noster. I don't know that I have like 16 really good bars or anything to share, but maybe like I could edit a guitar track or something.
just come up fun, man. You're very welcome.
I appreciate it. And I'll speak with you a little bit off camera, but I was going to ask if you could share a song that I could share when I put this video out, one of your own tracks that I could put into the video, maybe use as the intro music or something. Thank you. The other thing I've noticed that your faith is important to you. I don't know exactly what denomination, but I believe you're a Christian, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
And I thought of something the other day. I was Isaiah Jackson, who in the United States, he wrote a book called Bitcoin and Black America. And he put out a meme the other day of Jesus flipping over the merchants' tables who were set up in front of the temple. And he said something like, this is Bitcoin and the merchants are like Goldman Sachs and all this. So I don't know. I don't mean this to be like a facetious question, but I mean it genuinely because I've had this thought. What do you think Jesus would think of something like Bitcoin? I mean it genuinely.
That's a really deep question and a really great one. But Jesus talked a lot about money. And it's very much part of stewardship. I think that's my relationship with money. He says, it's the love of money is the root of all evil. It's not money, and there are people who will be who are the poor will always be among us. That's one thing. And then there is a responsibility for those to steward and look after the orphans and the widows and whatnot. But there's going to be those who are just gifted with making one, make two, make four, and that's just the way it is. So it's a real heart issue. So With Bitcoin, I mean, one line that comes to mind, I'd have to refer to it, but they used to ask him, there's a time when they asked him about taxes and whatnot, because he used to hang out with the tax collectors who were
Sure.
those, and they was like, okay, he was like, they were like, okay, should we give this money to the Romans? And he said, whose face is on there? And then they say Caesar. And he said, fine, give to Caesar who give to Caesar what is Caesar's then,
That's
right?
right. Yep.
So in my mind, in my but okay, I'm this is me now, this is me just, interpreting. I'm like, well, whose face is on Bitcoin? I mean, there's no face on it,
That's
right?
right.
I mean,
Yeah.
someone made that logo, but there's no face on it. Like, it's not like, there are all these different currencies around the world would have like a president or a monarch on there,
Yep.
and the way it's made, it's I treat it as an asset, especially in a developing country where inflation is just rampant. It's definitely been an opportunity for me to save and bank myself in a way and be a steward. So I look at it as a steward. I think there is if there is a parable about money, my favorite one is about the parable of the talent. I'll quickly paraphrase
Please,
it.
yeah.
It's just that he says the master, he has some different kind of servants of the house, and he travels, but he leaves some money with them, and then he leaves one servant like one talent, which is like a portion, I don't know, some of value, and then he leaves another one two and another one four and whatnot, and he goes away on a trip and he comes back. And then, the one of the ones who had more was like, hey, you gave me four, now I've made it eight. He said, okay, well done, good and faithful servant. All right, well, I'm pleased with your work. The other one who had two, you made it four. He said, well done, good and faithful servant. Keep going. And then he goes to the one who had the one. He was like, oh, master, like I was so like scared and didn't know what to do. I just dug it and put it in the ground. And it's back. And then he's like, oh wait, like you couldn't even put it in the bank, you could have got interest. Like and he literally says that in there. So you could at least got interest. Like you're wicked and you're lazy, like you didn't even move it. Like you didn't even like churn it and make it into something else. With that, I'm taking it and I'm giving it to one who flipped the four and made it eight. Like I'm taking that away from you and flipping it. And that always kind of gives me it kind of motivates me to be a good steward of what I have. I'm very, very, I'm very conscious of what I've been given, what I've been blessed with, my exposure. For instance, I didn't ask to live out of Tanzania. I grew up in the UK and then moved back here. But it's given me a way to, yeah, it's given me a way to communicate. It's given me a way to expose myself and also a vision to come back to Tanzania and contribute in a way that I've learned. I've traveled. I'm versed. So stewardship is a big thing to me, and I believe that is something that as Christians we have to answer for. How we spend our time, how we spend our energy, how we looked after those who had less, and how we looked after when we had more. So yeah, how would you think about Bitcoin? He didn't really rock with money, man. He didn't need it, but I think it's something that, he was conscious. If it's an asset, man, he was conscious of assets, land and whatnot. He knew about that. So in my mind, I treat it like land. So
Interesting. Interesting. That's a
yeah.
great, that's a amazing, could not have asked for a more amazing answer. So thank you. I appreciate that. Really, really
No,
fascinating. And
no,
thank
no. Thank you for letting me share. I appreciate it.
No, of course, of course. I did not know how, so what age did you move from the UK back to Tanzania?
So I was born in Tanzania, and then when I was one, we moved to Kuwait, the Middle East, and then we were there for about 2, 3 years, and then there was the Gulf War, so we had to leave, and then moved to the UK. So I was in the UK for 25 years. So home schooling there, called uni there and worked there, and then when I was 28, 27, 28, I moved to Tanzania. So Yeah, 27 makes sense because this is my 10th anniversary is coming September 13th, actually. Wow, actually,
Cool.
yes. Yeah, 10-year anniversary is coming up. So, yeah. Yeah,
Very
man.
cool. Is your accent, is it sort of a blend like between
I
Tanzanian
think
accent?
it's murked now. It's like there's I mean some think there's some American twang in there. There's some British twang in there now, and it's just all messy now. I don't even know what it sounds like anymore.
Interesting, because
But
I was
yeah.
like, I was thinking of it. I don't know that I have had students from Tanzania, and I was like, is this the accent? Now that you're saying this, I'm
Oh
like, oh no,
no.
this is a
I'm
combination
a
of a lot of things.
I'm a
Yeah.
hybrid. Yeah, I'm a hybrid. Yeah,
Got it.
I'm a hybrid.
Cool. Okay. Nice. Well,
Yeah.
you've set an example. You've done this amazing work. Do you have any tips for people who are looking to use Geyser Fund as a platform to fundraise? And tips in terms of conceptualizing sort of what to do to fundraise for, and then the actual process of fundraising. What should they do to get people's attention and make people hand over their their hard-earned satoshis to support what they're doing?
Yeah, no, I think, I think I've learned within the Bitcoin community, there's different type of Bitcoiners, and the Bitcoiners that I wouldn't be in my particular place if it wasn't for these value for value Bitcoiners who are willing to share their Bitcoin, for either for an experience or because they want to see a change in something. Like for instance, those who have donated towards my songs, those who have just zapped me for, even posting a funny meme, just I'm talking about the wide spectrum of stuff, and even now regards to Mount Kilimanjaro. So I think you just, but the thing is, like, seek and you will find. Like if you're really looking, you got to get your hands dirty and look and just try to ask questions and just kind of get there involved. Similarly, I was doing the same thing on Twitter, like when it was before Nosta. For me, I was very focused on location. So my frustration was like, where the Tanzanian Bitcoin is at? Okay, if they weren't there, all right, where the East African Bitcoin is at? If they're not there, where the African Bitcoin is at? Like, it was just, you know what I'm saying? Like, and then until it came to a point where it's like, when now literally this happens now, when someone talks about Bitcoin in Tanzania, my name comes up. Like, it's just it that that that's just kind of how I've just participated in spaces, sat, listened, asked my question, my one question, my two question, retreated, whatever the case may be. It's and they value you that way. It is a community. It's like, if you don't contribute to the space, I don't think I would have got funded. Like, I think it was a leverage of the fact that I share, I comment on things, on not for the sake to get something back, but I engage. I'm engaging in the community. So my advice would be like, just either sit in a space, find a space that I'm that was how I kind of got involved. So there was a lot of Twitter spaces that I would sit in and just listen, especially ones, Africa specific ones. That was my specific one. So whatever your topic is, I mean, you hear Bitcoin Acacia on there, Bitcoin Ubuntu, Okin, KG, Marcel. Like, it's the same people. It's the same people. Like, and when you see it's the same people, you're like, oh, okay, it's actually kind of small. This community is actually kind of small. So yeah, just find within the Bitcoin community, there is another community. So I'm part of like the African Bitcoin community, and then I'm part of a music community as well. So those are probably my two big strong ones. And I'm trying to break into the educator community, which is, fair enough. That's that I don't have that much experience in that. So I'm trying to push into that boundary now as well. So same thing. I'm starting from scratch and working my way up to that. So just sit in spaces and ask questions. That's a good start.
Great suggestions. And I also great breakdown of how there are different Bitcoiners and these different niches within the Bitcoin community, because it's definitely a real thing. So for people out there who are sort of new to Bitcoin, it's definitely not good. It's definitely not the best way to think about Bitcoiners or Bitcoin enthusiasts as a very homogenous thing, because there's many different approaches to this, you know, thinking about it as a network, an asset, and then all these niches within it. There's so much to sort of take into consideration, a lot of personalities involved, and it's a very diverse, broad community in many senses, not necessarily in just nationalities, heritages, gender, whatever. It's diverse on many different levels. There's a lot of different approaches to this. I'm going to wrap it up there, but I want you to take a moment, if you don't mind. Please let people know where they could find you on Wavelake, where they could find you on Nostr, or how they can find you on these places so that they can support some of your projects.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, so on X, you can find me there, Man Like Quakes. So Quakes is spelled Kweks. On Nostr, you just find Man Like Quakes. And it's a brand. Like, literally, if you just type in Man Like Quakes, even on Google search, I'll pop up there. Wavelake, you'll find me the same name. And it's been a great thing. I got to thank my nephew for giving me such a cool name. So yeah, usually Wavelake, X, and Nostr. I'm mostly on Nostr. X, it's like a bi-weekly thing. Definitely check the DMs more than I check anything else.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah. I'm on Nostr quite a lot and have a lot of fun there.
Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I'm fascinated by the world of Nostr and Twitter. Well, I kind of feel like it's moving over to Nostr. A lot of the Twitter community is moving over there and doing more, but this world of like Bitcoin personalities, people in the space. One of the reasons I started this podcast is to see sort of who's behind the handle and to like put a face to it and to hear their voice. So this was really, really satisfying. Yeah, I heard a lot of great things about you from Marsha Lorraine. The work she's doing is really inspiring, and I really love what she's doing. So I took her sort of, you know, when she talked about you, I was like, okay, I got to find out who this guy is. So thank you for taking the time to have this conversation. Yeah, this has been, anything else you want to add before we close this out?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I'm really interested in your story, but I'm just curious because, you know, I ambitiously called this Kilimanjaro trip Poa Kili 23, as in like, there might be a sequel. So there might be a Poa Kili 24. Ooh. And that piqued interest a little bit.
Yeah.
So
sure.
But I mean, it had such a great, you know, response and such a great journey. So I would love to. I think I would be encouraged to do it again if I had others who were willing to do it too. So I'm thinking again, similar time next year.
Okay.
I'm potentially thinking that I need to recover a little bit and just ask myself a few questions. But I'm just saying, money off the table. Would it be something you'd be interested in doing, like a personal thing for yourself? Would you think of doing something like that?
Totally. And I'm going to ask one thing, if you don't mind. So I don't know whether I'm allowed to say this or should say this, but I know that there's at least a rumor that the third African Bitcoin conference will be held in Kenya. And I don't know if I'm going to get in trouble for sharing this rumor. So if there is any way to potentially schedule around that, if the timing works that would be tremendous. So I'm going to be back in Ghana for this year's African Bitcoin conference. I couldn't make it last year, unfortunately, but I'm super excited because I'm going to be meeting a lot of some of the, you know, the people I've been speaking with. I don't know. Will you be in Ghana this year or?
I won't be in Ghana this year. I'm hoping to go to the Cape Town one end of Jan, though.
Cool.
Adopting
Bitcoin. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. If the rumor is true, we don't have to get into it. And it's in Kenya for the third year. I would love to make that trip. Man. Something like that, I think, would be a really good. Yeah.
That's a great idea. Yeah, I'm sure I know those organizers, man. So I'll bump heads with them and see what we can come up with. That sounds really cool.
I won't share any names here just so I don't get in trouble for anyone like spilling the beans too early. But that sounds great. I'm super into that stuff. As I mentioned, like I train for long distance triathlon and stuff like that. So I love endurance things. I love I love the outdoors, and I always enjoy. I spent a lot of time in rural Africa, so being out in nature in Africa, it's just I mean, it's like the privilege of a lifetime, really. So, let's leave it at that. I'm sure this conversation will continue either in person or maybe we'll do this again at some point in the near future. But I love the way you're thinking. I love everything you're doing. Thank you for sharing everything that you did today. This was a pleasure. Thank you again.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. We'll talk soon.